Hello and welcome to the NRL Supercoach Champions podcast. I'm Joe Fitz. Well, it was a week where bold decisions seemed to pay off, with many super coaches defying traditional wisdom by trading out guns, looping with a poor auto emergency score on the bench, and culling cash cows early. And speaking of bold, tonight we've got a bloke 1 week into his big man underwear modelling and spokesperson career. It's Bear. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, mate, not too bad. Rising up the ranks again, so another good week, mate.
Riding up, unlike those Manscaped undies, no doubt. Wow. And a moment's silence for our next host, who's doing the podcast dressed in black from a dark room with a single candle, all in mourning over the axing of Anthony Milford. It's Wilf.
And I'll throw in here that those Manscaped undies also come in black, so I've got a pair of those on as well. Yeah, look, it is dark times, but I'm thinking of going and check out the South Logans game this week because that back line is hot.
Yeah, Carmichael Hunt's there too, Tessie New, Anthony Milford. Who else is there?
Albert Kelly.
Oh, God. It's a Supercoach dream from 2014 or something like that. So interesting times. That's my junior club from many, many years ago. So good luck to them. I hope they smash the competition. So lots to talk about. We can go around the grounds. I guess I'll lead again. 14.48 was a pretty disappointing week for myself, which has dropped me a couple of thousand spots down to 3,475. How'd you go, Bear?
Yeah, I got 1277, and that's taken me up into the 4,000. So I think I'm tracking you down.
You are, mate. You're every week you're chunking into that lead there, and you're breathing down my neck. But we're getting paced by Wilf. You're well out ahead.
I wouldn't say well out. I think the rank's a little bit deceiving. I am sitting at 1445 after my 1236 this week. But honestly, I think there's probably like 50 points between us, something like that. It's really compressed up the top. So not getting ahead of myself at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I guess genuinely well ahead of us is a whole bunch of our champs, mate. Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got three of our champs currently sitting in the top 20. So Alex, coach of Bet and Standout, has dropped back to second, but only 4 points behind first. Those two have a little bit of a buffer over third and beyond. We've got Don, coach of Walters Woofers, back in 11th. And we've got John, coach of Micah Damani, sitting in 18th. But, yeah, look, it's, again, fantastic run from the champs. 11 of them in the top 100, 26 in the top 1,000, 41 in the top 2,000, 68 in the top 5,000. That's over half our group. So I think that's really, really impressive work from them. Just shout out to the Chumps Only League. We're currently sitting third overall, hashtag Chumps for Life. And we still have three champs leagues in the top five. And again, I mentioned last week, we only created 11 of these leagues. And the lowest ranked of us, of those 11 leagues, are currently sitting in the 44th highest league ranking. So of the top 44 leagues, we currently have 25% of them, which I think is still pretty incredible. So
that's amazing.
Just goes to show how well everyone else is going. And yeah, like I said, they hopefully listen to us, but, you know, do as we say, don't do as we do, obviously, because they're beating most of us at the moment. Look, I do have to give a quick shout out to the Turbos Hammies Cup, sitting in the 12th ranked league overall. It's actually a head-to-head slash overall comp featuring basically a lot of the Supercoach podcasts out there. So obviously, Joel, you and I are representing the champions in that league. There's Timmy Williams and the Spy from Playbook, Barnsley Billy from All Stars, Mike and Savs, and a few others from the SC Experience. There's Costa from Searching for Corey Parker. There's the SC Whisperer himself, Cowboy from the Points Per Minute podcast. For those who remember, he's taken a bit of a break last two seasons, but definitely before that, he obviously had quite a loyal following as well. There's Brent and Kane Ando from BJ on Game Day, Bergs and Con from SC360, even Matty Perso. Perso's got a bit of a run there.
Oh, good old Perso.
He's been around for quite a few of those podcasts. But, yeah, look, if you're interested in following how this league is going, you can look up Turbo Hammies Cups-Podcast League on Facebook. It's a public group. You can join it. You know, links to all the podcasts we put up on there. And, yeah, look, I have to say, you know, I'm currently sitting 3-0 in head-to-head.
Which is the mirror of what I think I'm coming stone motherless last. So it's a pretty tough league given that, you know, I'm in the top 3,500 and, you know, I've been given a touch-up in all three head-to-head rounds. So plenty of big boys in that league for sure. And speaking of big boys, some good news. Manscaped just launched in Australia. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job. You can be one of the first to experience their life-changing products here in Australia. True story, Wilf Bear and I have a private chat where we plan the podcast, discuss strategies, and vent about our teams throughout the weekend. And it's basically turned into a chat about how incredible the Manscaped products are, as well as how good a shape our boys are in now that we've received some TLC. Text only, of course. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. It's absolutely premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave, and the waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower. One of the coolest features is the LED light, which illuminates grooming areas for a closer, more precise trimming. They've also upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology, and I don't need to tell you blokes about the benefits of a quiet stroke. We want you to experience it firsthand for yourself. So you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code CHAMPIONS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code CHAMPIONS. Your balls will thank you.
What's the matter? I've sure seen a football in here before, you wimps. Let's go.
So we've got no NRL physio this week, Wilf, and Bear, so we can just do a bit of a quick injury wrap. You've got a bit of a list there for us, Wilf.
Yeah, so look, TLT this week is definitely a mess, and part of that is due to the injuries we're going to have to sort through. So I'm just going to quickly wrap up injuries from the weekend and also looking at a couple of injuries that have just cropped up from today. Firstly, the Warriors, they did cop a bit of a significant blow, losing Adam Fanua-Blake 2 weeks ago, but it's unfortunately turned out a bit worse than what they first thought. So what was initially just a bone contusion is basically a lot worse. There's also a PCL injury in there. And yeah, it looks, and this is just to borrow from NRL Physio because he made this comment, but basically there's not been an injury of this magnitude in the past 6 years in NRL, if not longer. It's extremely rare. Basically, the fracture here is extremely uncommon in adults, basically to add on damage to, he says, the patella tendon and the PCL by a blunt force to the front of the knee. It's basically, it's something you expect from a car crash injury rather than one from the footy field. So it's just incredible and unfortunately really, really bad luck to Fanua-Blake. And it seems like he's likely 4 to 6 months out, which obviously has big flow-on effects to that Warriors pack. Again, we saw a big name, obviously, Ryan Madison, late withdrawal, not as late as last week, but we did find out fairly late that he wasn't going to play, and it's still relating to that concussion, unfortunately, suffered 3 weeks ago. And yeah, we know, obviously, Madison, we've spoken plenty about his concussion issues in the past. Linked to that, obviously, Wade Graham, second concussion in 3 weeks, Josh Dugan, second in 2 weeks. So that's led to both of them getting a bit of a spell. Ryan James also, he didn't fail this week's HIA, but obviously two head knocks in consecutive weeks. I think he's basically been given a week off, and we'll hopefully see him back soon rather than later. Now, the Roosters, obviously, they are really scrambling for, I think they're up to their seventh choice hooker, basically. Freddie Lussick left the field with their fractured forearm, and yeah, it's not good news for them. Similarly, the Seagulls are like the Roosters and their hooker issues. Seagulls running out of back rowers. Jack Koscielski gone for potentially quite a while now, but they hopefully will get some of the other troops back. Like, I think we'll talk about it shortly as we go through the team lists. Dylan Walker also facing time on the sideline due to a hamstring injury, but obviously good news is Tommy Tobo's back to replace him at fullback. No doubt there'll be some interest given how good Tom Trbojevic is for Supercoach purposes. The Knights continue to cop more and more injuries. So they've already drawing on their development players in Chris Randall, who unfortunately fractured his wrist shortly after scoring a try. So yeah, he's gone for extended period of time. On to the Broncos, they lost Ben Teo, who ruptured his biceps tendon. Not good news for him. It could spell the end of his season, if not potentially his NRL career altogether. With him potentially going for 3 to 4 months. And we also saw some injury concerns for the Raiders with Josh Hodgson. He had a hip flexor issue and he didn't finish his game. And yeah, so I spoke about before some updated information that just come out earlier today. So Josh Jackson, unfortunately, has torn his calf muscle during training And this is obviously set to see him miss not just this weekend, but depending on the severity, he might miss a couple of weeks now. And we will see Luke Thompson start in his place. It did seem like Luke Thompson himself had some concerns regarding hamstring issue, even though this is his first game back. Could have just been a precaution, obviously, with him building up his match fitness. So, yeah, some concerns there, obviously, for the Bulldogs. Now, the Cowboys also copped a few injuries with the Hammer, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido, doing an ankle, and he's going to be out for a couple of weeks. And Reuben Cotter, unfortunately, a foot injury after he just spent some time off due to concussion. Tamalolo hopefully will be back, but he's not guaranteed to return. He's still got to tick off some boxes, basically. And an injury I shouldn't have skipped over before, but it turns out Chance Nickel-Cluckster, unfortunately, has a neck injury and he's going to be out long term. So no doubt we'll talk about his replacement shortly. But yeah, plenty of injuries, unfortunately. I think another one that came out just today, David Fusatua, hamstring concern, will miss at least a fortnight. But I guess for them, they do get Peter Hiku back. So yeah, there's a lot of injuries now and it's getting harder and harder to navigate. So no doubt we'll need to spend some time sorting through all of that for sure.
Yeah, I'm just shaking my head at all those soft tissue injuries, which is obviously proven to be exacerbated by fatigue and so many HIAs, which obviously come from head eyes and sloppy tackling technique, which is also a function of fatigue. So I do wonder, you know, if and when the penny's going to drop with what's happening with the play style, because it's not quite having the intended effects, is it? Bear, anyone kind of jump massively out at you with that list?
Nah, not really. I think Fanua Blake is going to be a big loss for the Warriors. He was giving them a good bit of go forward. So, I mean, there's not for Supercoach purposes, really. There's plenty of people to cover.
Yeah. And the Matto stuff isn't really news, is it? It's kind of fairly expected at this point.
Yeah.
So you really need to get off Matto, just unfortunately, until he conquers those concussion demons one way or another. So, look, let's go to the teams.
Steven, I like your hustle. That's why it was so hard to cut you. Congratulations. The rest of you made the team. Except you and you.
Rather than have Wilf kind of continue his seance over the Broncos, Bear, let's go to the Thursday night game and have you talk us through the Panthers and the Broncos.
So this is just going to be an absolute flogging, in my opinion. Nah, the
that's the beginning and end of it, isn't it, really? That's the analysis. It's going to be a flogging.
Load up on the Panthers from 2-7 and you should be good. Now, I mean, Milford's out. I don't know if that was going to be the answer, but he's replaced by Croft. So it'll be interesting to see how these two go as a pair. The big one for me for Brisbane, though, is TPJ is starting on an edge. So I think he had a pretty big break even and got sweet FA last week, so I think he might have a decent break even on him again, but he could be a good option running on an edge. He's got a good offload. He'd sort of like kick out, so yeah, he could be a bit of a pot option in the future.
He's down to 579 with a break even of 139, so he could be low 500s pretty soon.
Yeah, he's not hitting 130 against the Panthers, I don't think. And then the Panthers are stock standard. James Fisher-Harris is having not a bad season. You probably still want to go at the Haases and Clemmers over him, but he's not a bad option if you're looking at a cut price bloke. But yeah, like it's all in the Panthers halves and centers here, and obviously Toto there. I think they'll have another field day. They're on a roll, the Panthers, and I think that'll be continuing.
Yeah, it's really a case of any Panther that's super coach relevant has a history or at least a proven track record of being able to ton up. So it's just a matter of picking the right one as your VC. Very obvious that this game's where your VC's got to go. It could be anyone, even a Kirk Capel who's got a 150 in his kit bag from a few years past. So Tessie New, obviously, for the Broncos, the other out, which, bit like Milford, I'm not sure it's necessarily deserved, but I'm got a feeling he'll be back in the side sooner rather than later. So, Wilf, we can move on from that, and there's plenty of interest in the Knights Sharks game, the first one up on Friday.
Yeah, so for the Knights, obviously they're getting some big names back, obviously headlined by your unfortunate trade-in the other day. Bradman Best is finally back for you. That's great.
Bradman Best is such a good trade-in this week and such a good play that I traded him in 3 weeks ago just for the opportunity.
Worth it, worth it. And Kurt Mann comes back as well, and also Jacob Saifidi back from suspension. So the good news for the Knights also is that Best returning means Shibasaki drops out of the side, and Mann's return also pushes Connor Watson back to lock, although we all know he's going to be on the bench come final team list as always. But yeah, I think either way, Watson playing back in the forwards overall is better for a super coach, I reckon, not as attacking stat dependent. So having said that, the excitement, I suppose, for the Knights fans, Braden Musgrove gets to make his debut on the wing. Unfortunately, Edric Lee will be delayed a little bit longer from a return, still ongoing injury issues. Tex Hoy, again, I think you're probably wanting to sell him. I can't see him playing in the team again, even when he is fit. And they're just, yeah, a few interesting names. Obviously, a lot of people will be wondering what to do with, say, a Mitch Barnett. For me, I'm happy just to hold all these guys, like Barnett, Frizzell, Rayleigh, Watson. They're all doing fine. And I know Barnett's going to lose goal kicking, but, you know, we saw not that long ago, 2 weeks ago, in fact, he only kicked one goal. He still scored 75. So, and that was with no significant attacking stats, no tries, line breaks. So I think Barnett, you know, he's going to build that combination on that left edge with Ponga. The only question mark is, you know, once Lockie Fitz is back, maybe that will eat into Barnett's minutes or change his role or whatever. But while he's playing 80 minutes on that left edge, I'm happy to just stick with him for as long as possible. I know people are very keen to move him. Like, he's worth a fair bit now, and the break-even's creeping a little bit high. But I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Ponga puts him over, or Kurt Mann puts him over, or even Jaden Brayley. The Sharks, what can we say about the Sharks? Obviously, huge news on the coaching front today. I'm really worried about the Sharks this week.
Morale's got to be pretty low, doesn't it?
I have to say so. Like, because from what I understand, John Morris is really popular. You know, he coached a lot of these guys through juniors, if I'm not mistaken. So for him to kind of get the boot the way it's happened, like, I think, you know, there's some rumors that there might be a player mutiny or whatever it might be. I'm just worried, like, this could be a game where it shouldn't be a Knights carve-up, but it could end up being one, because on the back of what you've seen the last few weeks, Knights have been struggling because of injuries, and then the Sharks have been, you know, quite dogged and impressive. And, you know, you could say that they should have beat the Roosters last week, except for some, you know, late second half magic from obviously the forwards, and then obviously Sam Walker off the back of that. So I think there could be some unexpected results in this game, honestly.
Yeah, so Talakai making his long-awaited return on the interchange bench is something of interest there. Obviously, he was a bit of a sneaky, great cash cow towards the back end of last year. So, yeah, and Teague Wilton continuing in that edge role for the time being. But you've got to imagine that things will start to shake up from a lineup perspective now that Morris has been marched, didn't even get the option of kind of leaving under his own power. I think he was dismissed effective immediately. So I guess that's the way the Sharks board want to run things. Bear, your Storm, this has got to be the match of the round, or maybe even the match of the kind of first part of the season, Storm Roosters.
Yeah, it's good the Roosters are looking a little bit healthier too. So it's apart from in the hooker position, but they're still pretty strong in the forwards. Radley's in there. They're arguably still a top four team, so it is a battle of the heavyweights, really. Melbourne, especially now, looked a lot better with Kafusi back. George Jennings has surprisingly slipped under the radar too. His super coach scores are going pretty good. Harry Grant, once he came on, you could see how much better they looked as well, and I think if it's not a late change this week, I think you'll see him start possibly next week with Smith going back to that lock role he had there. But it's good to see Lindsay Collins back as well. Hopefully he's all right. He was putting together a pretty good super coach year as well. as well as providing a lot of go forward in their forwards. So it should be a pretty good battle. I don't know about the scores from some of the popular players in this game. Like, I wouldn't be tipping Brett Morris to be hitting 100. I'm not really tipping Tedesco to get there either, but also players like Munster and that, I'm not too sure. I think this might be a bit of a arm wrestle in the middle.
Yeah, traditionally two of the worst Supercoach teams to score against. So, yeah, it could be probably a very high-quality affair in terms of NRL footy, but in terms of Supercoach, I wouldn't expect too much in the way of fireworks. So, but I'll be glued in front of the TV for sure.
Yeah, it'll be a good game. And I had this discussion with you earlier about a few of these players. I've still got Tupanua, and just with these halves, I was saying to you, I'd like to go back and watch a bit of, especially Sam Walker in the juniors, because he's taken on the line well and he throws that big cutout ball, but I don't think I've really seen those little short balls. Tupanua runs a good line, so does Crichton, so I'd like to see some of that, or if anyone knows what he was like throwing those little short balls in the 20s, if you can let us know on Twitter, because I haven't really seen it yet, and I just getting the feeling that the structures that they might need to run now to accommodate these two halves isn't going to be great for those edge forwards.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but it's the kind of thing where the way you approach attacking football can all change with one Justin Ollam special. So if Sam Walker runs into that right shoulder, he might find that the short ball's a better option all of a sudden than the show and go. So he is exciting, but very much I think I'd be looking to sit him on the non-playing reserves bench for me this week against the Storm. So Sea Eagles, Titans, obviously headlined by Tommy Turbo returning for the Eagles, Wilf.
Yeah, look, I think this is massive for the Sea Eagles. I think we've seen multiple times that they're just a better team when he's in there, whether he gives them confidence, whether he gets it done defensively. Obviously, we know what he can do in attack, so whatever. I think the Sea Eagles will be tougher to beat with him there. So I think this is bad timing for, obviously, the Titans to go up against them. Having said that, they do, you know, still have some injuries. They do get Ola Kawatu. I'm butchering his name for sure.
It's close enough, man.
the big O. No. He's returning in the second row. Cade Custer's back after missing last week due to illness. And they do have Tevita Funa also named in the extended bench after he came off. He was the 14 last week. So, like I mentioned before, Jack Chevsky out long term, unfortunately, due to a foot injury. And I think this is only good news for Josh Schuster's ongoing availability, although it's worth noting Curtis Sirenen not too far away. So I wonder, depending on how Ola Kawatu goes, whether Schuster ends up holding down a spot or whether Homoli goes back to the bench or whatever happens there. I think, you know, whether Schuster ends up being put to the bench as well, we might have to cash him out soon. So something to keep an eye on.
Sirenen traditionally being a right-sided edge player. So Schuster being on the left hopefully means he gets first dibs.
Yeah, it's a tough one, though, because from memory, I think when Ola Kawatu debuted last year, he played left side as well. So I wonder if it'll be telling to see whether Schuster moves right or if it's the big O.
Holy moly, I think his first name is pronounced, so that's easier for me. What are the Titans side?
Yeah, 1-17. Obviously, big bit of a watch on Philip Sammy, who was KO'd early in the game, and that obviously caused Fasua Malawi, unfortunately, to get put onto that right edge. And as we all know, his base stats suffered greatly, especially when there wasn't that much work to do, given how many tries that they were scoring and how much they were just going down the left side constantly. And when you got big Dave Fafita there, why wouldn't you, when he's just tearing up, scoring hat-tricks for fun? I'm so glad I got him in last week, hey?
it makes me feel really great for you, Wilf, that you got him in. Well done.
Look, I did mention it 2-3 times on the podcast. Like, I thought he was one of those guys you just had to get because he was so dangerous. He's going to go off again. Glad I backed my own advice this time.
Some of the what little non-Manscaped related content in our chat was me blaming Will for him getting Fafita in and me not. So just as a peek behind the curtain there, listeners. anything else of interest of the Titans, mate?
No, obviously, it's worth pointing out that left side is going to be very potent. Brian Kelly back. I think we saw he had 2 tries this last week. He's just going to make things really dangerous down that left edge. And, you know, who's to say Corey Thompson, the third highest averaging center wing, doesn't keep that going. He has scored 6 tries in 5 games, and he's just breaking the line for fun. I had a look. He's got 8 line breaks already. So what's to say between Brian Kelly and obviously Dave Fita just causing havoc that Corey Thompson doesn't keep being the beneficiary of that? Who knows? It's an interesting one for sure.
You reckon the Tigers could use him right about now?
The Tigers? Where else has he been in the past? There's a few teams that have...
And the Dogs as well.
Exactly.
No way Canterbury could fit him in. We're chockers with just quality talent from 1 to 17. Speaking of the Tigers, Bear, they're coming up against the Rabbitohs. Not quite a club in crisis, the Tigers, but certainly underperforming, and Madge has wielded the axe.
Yeah, the big one is Little getting dropped. I think that'll probably force a few people to make some trades there, especially if Simpkin, who plays as well as he does in the lower ranks, he's been really good, and he looked good in the trial too. So you knew this was only a matter of time as well. And it also links into one of my big mistakes at the start of the year. I did have a team with Simpkin and Walker in it, thinking they'd get time eventually and just didn't stick to it. But anyway, I think Embiid will cover him at hooker. I don't think he's up to playing 80 minutes of NRL consistent quality footy just yet. So I think he'll probably get a break at some stage through the game. But he looks like an obvious downgrade on the horizon. He'll probably play 13 if he holds the spot there, which I think he will. Mate, I didn't put this on the pod last week. I had different trades. I said I was going to bring in Fergo, but I really wanted to get Grant in. So I actually changed from bringing in Fergo for Fusatua and actually traded out Lamb and brought Adam Dewey in for last week. So that was a bit of a stroke of genius, you might say. And I tipped that on to our Patreon members. So that's just some of the bare gold you'll receive if you're one of the Patreon members there. As far as the Rabbitohs go.
I'm keeping quiet on that one, mate. I'm staying well away from it.
Away from anything bare gold related.
Yeah, exactly.
Mate, me tips on the Manscaped undies, though. Get on that one. As far as the Rabbitohs go, they've got Cody Walker back, and that just makes that left-hand edge just even more opportunistic. And yeah, I expect them to probably attack down there again like they always have. And it's a shame, but it's pretty much killing Josh Mansour. People thought he might have been an option, but I don't think he really is. Jacob Host still at this is one area where I think eventually might hurt the Rabbits when at the back end of the season. Just their forward pack, apart from Jai Arrow coming off the bench, it's just they're playing all right at the minute, but I don't know if you can have Mark Nichols and Patrick Mago as your two main forwards coming off the bench and compete for a comp. So I don't know. It's just a gut feeling on them. I think they might come back to the pack a bit the closer we get to finals, but they should pretty easily dust up the Tigers this week, who were booed off at halftime.
Yeah. Pretty hard to argue with Wayne Bennett, just given his track record, but I'd say there'd be a lot of Rabbitohs supporters that wouldn't mind Cam Murray playing on an edge instead of Host and having Arrow start and at least get that top 13 kind of as best as it could be, with Liam Knight in the extended bench to play a bit of middle. But look, again, you know, it's Wayne Bennett. It's pretty hard to argue against.
And I mean, it's hard too for Cam Murray because you see how much more effective he is at lock. And this is one of the arguments I made last year. Like, sure, Jai Arrow is a good pickup, but do you really need him when you've probably got one of the best locks in the game already? So, yeah, unless they put Arrow in the front row, which he's probably a bit too small for, I don't know how that's going to play out over the year. They're paying a lot of money for a bench player, but
they are indeed. And in a week where the captaincy option seems pretty wide open, you know, you could do a lot worse than Cody Walker or Latrell Mitchell running at the right hand defence of offhand Galway, Roberts and Nofaluma for the Tigers. So, yeah, keep that in your back pocket if you're a Cody or a Luttrell owner. Will, the Raiders, Eels, a few changes here as well?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, obviously, unfortunately, Nickel Cluckster injured long-term. So we do see Caleb Aikens coming in. He is around 295,000 roughly, fullback, centre wing, dual position. So you don't have to jump on him straight away, obviously. It'd be worth a week or two to look. But I think it's something to think about. Obviously, we're seeing Jake Simpkins show up now. I've got Caleb Aikens potentially on the horizon for what seems like it's going to be an extended run in first grade. So, you know, we can't all trade them in at the same time. So it's worth thinking about how you're going to plan your trades next few weeks. Might have to go early on one or two of them potentially. Otherwise, the Raiders also get back Curtis Scott, which does push Sebastian Chris back to the extended bench. Now Hodgson has been named, but there's some question marks over whether he will play. So obviously, if he's not, then Tom Starling, you'd assume, will start, and that might see someone else come off the bench. And you know that name, Corey Harawira Naira is there, but unfortunately, I'm still surprised. The big horse himself, Corey Horsburgh, still not on the extended bench even, let alone anywhere near the top 17. So that is a big shock after I thought, honestly, last year, one of their best forwards until he got hurt. So maybe he's still struggling with that. I haven't really looked into how he's going in reserve grade. Now, obviously, Ryan James is out of the 21 altogether, but I'm from what I can see, I've looked into this, I can't find any injury news. I think it might just be the fact that, like I said earlier, did get knocked out 2 weeks ago, had a head knock, but passed the game day HIA, but could just be a bit of a, you know, just rest up, Ryan, have a week off and you can come back in fresh later. But, well, obviously, I would suggest all Ryan James owners probably just hold for the time being and just reevaluate next week, depending whether he's named. On the Eels side, obviously, Dylan Brown has been suspended for one game for a crushed tackle. So we see Will Smith start at six. I don't think this will see Moses swap sides or anything, but again, it could happen potentially. I think last year it was Moses playing on the right side with Will Smith when Dylan Brown was out. So yeah, something to think about there. Otherwise, Madison named again, but you know, I don't think anyone would be surprised if he's out as a late withdrawal again. And Isaiah Papali'i, obviously more than capable replacement, playing on the edge. He's been absolutely fantastic for Supercoach. And I think anyone who took a gamble early on has been rewarded for that. I think for me, and this is more of an NRL thing, like I feel like he's far more effective when he comes off the bench as a middle, you know, after 20, 30 minutes or so, just smashes people. And I feel like it really changes the momentum towards the Eels when he does that. Whereas if he's just playing 80 minutes on an edge, like he's still good, but I feel not as good.
He's not an impact player, is he?
Yeah, it seems to blunt some of his effectiveness. And, you know, I guess having said that, it's probably better to have Papali'i there rather than, 80 minutes of Bryce Cartwright. Look, he played almost 15 minutes last week and he had some typically classic Cardi party errors, but no offloads, so he must have changed up his game a little bit there.
So all the downside with none of the upside, is that what the summary is of the Cardi party?
Pretty much, but for Supercoach, 372,000, if he's playing 50 minutes and he scored at pretty much 1 point per minute, I mean, if he's going to do it every week, then it's hard to argue that it's not something you have to think about, right?
I will never, ever, ever put Bryce Cartwright in my team. I'm just, again... Sorry, I should say again, burnt me about 72 times, that prick. So, look, the Sunday games, Dragons flying high in a win against those aforementioned Eels, up against the Warriors, who have a couple of changes of their own, Bear.
Yeah, the big ones there in at their second row with Josh Curran and Jack Murchie. I think Curran was an early season favourite cheapie, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes, and he might be a downgrade target in the next week or so. You've got Fusatua's gone, so then Marcelo Montoya's there in the centres. I don't know. I didn't really like Harris at prop. He still scored all right for Supercoach, but is you want your front rowers going forward. And the Dragons played with a lot of line speed last week. They were getting over the advantage line. Their edges were playing a lot of up and in footy when they saw the Eels shifting wide. They were pretty impressive the way they played, the Dragons. And they're playing with, I wouldn't say confidence, but they're having a real dig. So
they're well coached, I think. I mean, I know a lot of us laugh at Anthony Griffin, and he's not the most personable bloke, but you know, he's got a hell of a winning record as a coach at the Broncos and Penrith, and seems to be instilling that same kind of discipline, doesn't he?
Yeah, 100%, and you can see in their effort. Like a few years ago when they were coming first or whatever at the top of the eight until midway through the year, it was their line speed was massive, and then it just died away, and it's coming back, and they're better for it too. So I think, yeah, the Dragons, I still don't know if there's any super coach relevant players, maybe Lomax with the kicking if he finds a bit of form again. It's not like he's out of form, but like last year he was killing it, and this year he's not living up to last year's high levels, we'll say. But it'll be an interesting game. The Dragons are just even bringing Merrin and Alvaro off the bench, and they're just rolling through. So I obviously tipped the Eels like most people did last week, and the Dragons are a surprise packet. I don't think you can say that they're easy beats anymore and just guaranteed an easy matchup. They're outside defences playing really well. That's been surprising me.
Yeah, and look, in any other year where, you know, some of the gun fullbacks might be available at 5/8 or centre wing, we might, you know, bother to have a bit of a discussion about Matthew Dufty averaging 71 at only 575K, but he's probably about 5 or 6 back in the line, isn't he, at fullback?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, his average is incredible and he's playing some good footy, but like you said, when there's so many of these guys like Pappenhausen and obviously Teddy and Turbo's back and Mitchell's playing well again, you just can't have him.
Yeah. And the 4:05 game on Sunday, I'm going to christen it the Toilet Bowl, Wilf, between the Bulldogs and the Cowboys.
I mean, the Cowboys did win, right? So they're at least not winless.
Like the Bulldogs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I didn't want to go there, but yeah, this could be, I mean, at least the Bulldogs scored finally, right?
Yeah, they did with, you know, a little bit of a spark. The only problem is we were conceding 3 points for every one we scored, so probably not ideal. Trent Barrett, you were attacking guru, whisperer, whatever people called you coming into the job, but I'm not bitter.
I was going to say, at least, you know, a try against the Storm surely counts for two against most other teams. So, look, you got that positive to take from it.
Thanks, Wilf. Can you read the teams, please?
So, like I said, Tamalolo has been named to return, but he's still got to tick off a few things. Colin Hess shifts to prop. That pushes Molo back to the bench. And Ruben Cotter, he's obviously injured, so he's dropped out. And Justin O'Neill gets a recall due to Tabuai Fido injuring his ankle. And Mitch Dunn, now he is on the extended reserves along with Peter Holler. Now, I know there's a lot of interest in Ben Condon, who has been named to start yet again. And, you know, obviously he's got a nice negative break even. I think it's like negative 21 or thereabouts. It's going to be really hard to know. And it sucks that this is the late game and the last game of the round, because I know a lot of people, say myself, was considering something like a Jordan Ricci down to Ben Condon to free up coin, with Ricci being benched this week and probably losing some money soon. And the thing is, you know, what happens? Like, Mitch Dunn could easily be promoted to the starting lineup after, you know, he was there earlier, and it seems like, I think Todd Payton seemed to like him. So a lot of question marks there, and it makes Condon a very risky trade-in, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I think you've got to either just bite the bullet. He could be absolutely a trap. But, I mean, I think I would be making sure my expectations are, if you downgrade him to, you know, he's 186K, so he's not quite bottom dollar either, but if you downgrade him, expecting him to be at least be on the bench, and you know, he's an NPR for you, makes a little coin for 2-3 weeks or whatever, and then you upgrade him later, like, if that's your expectation, he probably should be an okay trade in. But outside of that, then yeah, I think it's just don't be hoping to start him because he's a starting back row or anything like that. And hopefully your team is not in such dire straits that you need to start an edge back row from the Cowboys.
Yeah, and we've got a bit of chat in depth in our strategy section where, you know, we talk about the value of a trade and you know, what is kind of constitutes value coming back on a trade. And for me, Condon's a bit of a litmus test to that because he's, at best, I think he's going to be a mediocre cow and he could be a terrible one. And whether it's worth pulling the trigger on the downgrade for the cash is something we'll go a little bit more in depth on. But that's the team news for the week. Let's chat now about our predictions for the week.
If you are what you say you are, yeah, a superstar, then have no fear, the camera's here.
All right, so I am finally off my duck egg. I finally got one right. It's because I got to pick first and I got Pappenhausen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was going to pick Paps, but that's fine.
Yeah, we all had a go.
There was too.
Yeah, we all had a go. But look, yeah, 113. I had him down for 140 odds. So, you know, I was really close initially on review, but obviously a bit of bit of late changes. And look, I'll talk about that because I think, honestly, I think the review, they probably just added two line breaks by accident. And it sounds so amateurish. And it, to be honest, it probably a little bit is. But yeah, like there was nothing in the game that indicated he would ever get any extra line breaks. He had two live. He finished up with two. I don't know where the other two came from. So honestly, I think it was just an admin error, which was then reversed. But anyway, that's a bit of an aside. You know, you picked Nofo, Joe, and he scored 76, not quite 135, but he could have gone much bigger if one. I think he had a try disallowed, didn't he?
He did. The one that was really going to have the Tigers roar back into contention took their the air out of their balloon a little bit.
Yeah, so that's yeah, obviously bad luck for your prediction there. And Bear, you had Munster for 120. He scored 78. So, again, not a bad shout at all. But obviously, we do have to congratulate our winner. At K underscore Rob 2020, predicted 155. And David Fafita was our highest scorer of the week. He's top scored with 147. So, quite a few people did pick David Fafita. But K underscore Rob 2020, you were the closest, just 8 points off. So, make sure, as always, you're following at Swish. And they'll reach out to you via direct messages on Twitter. And I'll tweet out the confirmation there and they'll be able to respond to that soon after. So how are you guys feeling about this week? Bear, I think it's finally time for you to have a pick, I reckon.
Lead off, mate.
Tough one this week. I think I'll go... I really want to pick David Fafita, but that might be a bit too easy. I'm going to go Cleary for...
Oh, come on. That was my guy. 3 weeks in a row. Yeah. That's right.
Cleary for about 120.
120. All right. That is obviously a great pick because it's stolen from under my nose. So out of spite, I'm going to go Jerome Luai, 123. What about you, Wilf?
Jeez. I mean... Is this just the way we're going to play it? Like every time someone else says a pick, I was like, oh, I was going to pick him too.
Well, I'm saying it now before the actual game's played, to be fair.
Ride Paps, Wilf.
No. I think it's a bit boring. Let's get a bit creative. And I won't pick David Fafita because that's the easy pick. This is a tough one. Let me see here. I'm going to pick Alex Johnston for 133.
That's a great call, attacking that right edge.
You're off your head.
I'm off my head. Why's that?
Will the ball even get there? They're probably going to score tries before even the ball gets to him.
Oh, look, if they do that, I hope my boy Dan Gagai gets a couple of those tries before they get to Alex Johnston. Just hedging my bets here. Either I'm right and you know, he goes for a hat trick or even four. Or if I'm not, then hopefully Gagai and the other guys get the tries before Alex Johnston does.
Look, with AJ's base, he might actually need seven to get that score, mate.
That's a good shout. Look, it could happen, definitely. We've seen how bad James Roberts and David Nofaluma have been going defensively, so it could certainly be ugly. But look, we do have to thank Swish for sponsoring this segment. So Swish, they are changing the way fans interact with their favorite athletes. Again, if you haven't seen it, Swish does give you the chance to get a personalized video message from any sports star, not just rugby league players, not just NRL Supercoach relevant guys, which obviously we focus on. But yeah, they've got over 100 NRL players, including the likes of Nathan Cleary, Tommy Turbo, Cam Murray, James Tedesco, and obviously Ryan Pappenhausen and Brian Bizzer-To'o. An absolutely awesome gift for anyone who loves their sport or even the NRL Supercoach. Yeah, it's a chance to deliver a message to your mates differently, whether it's birthday, invitation, bucks parties, teammates, all sorts of options there, even some trash talk for Supercoach purposes. It's real easy. Just pick an athlete on heyswish.com. You send your instructions through for the video and Swish takes care of the rest. And it's worth, again, remembering at least 20% of the proceeds from every video are donated to children's charities. And so, for example, Swish will donate 20%, and a lot of the athletes also contribute some of the payment to charities as well. So I think sometimes, yeah, almost up to 100% of that money gets paid through. So it's really great. Again, heyswish.com. You'll get a discount code if you use the code CHAMP, C-H-A-M-P, and that'll get you 10% off. And also, you know, you can check them out on socials at Swish, S-W-Y-S-H, on Facebook, Instagram, and also Twitter, of course. So, yeah, make sure you check it out. It's definitely good fun, as you guys have seen, hopefully, from some of the messages we've been able to put together so far.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
Now, we've got a bit more time now to talk in-depth strategy, and a topic that's kind of near and dear to my heart this week is around the idea of, you know, most of us have been trading two times every single week. I know I have. And given that we've only got 37 trades for the 25 weeks, we're going to have to start getting serious about conserving trades in the next few weeks if we want them to last post-origin. So keen to discuss, and maybe Bear will go to you first, what the trigger is for you when deciding whether to save a trade or make kind of a mediocre one that might only make you a little bit of money or bring in a decent player or a cow.
For me now, if I'm making trades now, it is mainly for the money. So I'd be having a look at people who are like, even though he might be back on the bench, Papali'i, he's got a negative break even. Even Dewey, he's got a very low break even and has a good run. So guys like that who do have the negative break evens, but they've been scoring really well as well. Even Papali'i off the bench is still going to crack decent scores to rise the next couple of weeks, and just use them as stepping stones to guys I need. That's more though too if I'm sort of chasing the points, which is what I'm doing from where I am. I've got a strategy now for my side where I think I need to try and get to a final 17 as quick as possible and then just sit on the trades. So I've got targets who I want and a few plans on how to get there. And then with the guys who are, I'm trading to guys who I think will play, fill in at origin spots. So you've got like that Melbourne winger who will probably come in and play a game there. So if you're downgrading in the centre wings, you'll probably want to bring him in. Yeah, but if I'd be playing it totally different. If I was near the top, I'd be saving as many trades as possible because your team's pretty much set up and you're probably cruising along pretty well at the moment. So there'd be no real reason to rush your trades at the minute. And that's what I see with Teddy too. So I'll use him as an example. I'm tempted to trade him out this week to try and make cash in other positions because I feel Teddy's not going to hit 150 versus Melbourne. That's not a trade I would be making if I was sitting in the top 1,000. Up there, you've got the chance to save your trades, wait for people like me who are trying to catch up to make the trades and make mistakes. Because if you trade out Teddy, who's a proven winner, who are you bringing in? You're bringing in maybe RTS, who's got a good run, but he's playing for the Warriors, who are not always that good. You might be taking a shot at Turbo, who's still got a dodgy hammy, but he does have that upside. Or you're going for Mitchell, who one week he's flying, the next week, even though he's been more consistent this year, he might have a down game or he might be sharing stats with half his other players. So the guys who are chasing are making the big calls. And yeah, so if I was at the top, I'd probably be saving my trades, whereas the guys chasing don't have that luxury.
So somewhere where you are, which is getting awfully close to where I am, you're in the 4K area. Does that kind of include chasing a gun who might have gotten out of your price range? So, you know, a David Fifita at 750 or even a Luai kind of in the mid sixes, knowing that you could have gotten them for much cheaper?
Fifita's the hard one for me. 750 is a lot of money to be paying for a second rower, especially someone like him. Like, he could easily, mate, playing in that position, maybe grab a head knock, or they might give him a rest. He might become Tino for a week and they just like, sit down, big boy, you can have a few minutes breather. And then all of a sudden he's facing massive break even. So I think a lot of people would have got him early. That's a really big call on someone like him. For someone like Louis, who I'd still want, I don't mind him at the 630, though he's got a low break even where Cameron Munster's is a bit higher. If Louis, after this week, Louis probably out of reach, and I'd probably prefer to go to Munster, who, even if he does hit his break even, he's not going to move too much away from 610 either way. So yeah, you got to toss that up. And Munster's obviously a gun too, so that's not a bad trade. But if it was someone like, I don't know, one of the other 5'8s who's a bit further down, then I probably wouldn't bother with the trade. I'd just hold whoever I've got, like a Watson or whatever.
And I guess given just the plethora of Supercoach information that's out there, not only through podcasts but, you know, on various websites and chats around, Wilf, the conventional wisdom has kind of had, you know, it is old hat, and we've had to throw it out the window. And one of those, you know, nuggets of wisdom was that a trade was kind of had to be worth 100 to 150K to be worthwhile. Is that something you hold on to anymore?
I mean, I've never really subscribed to that closely. I think I've always looked at it as how many points is the trade worth, because at the end of the day, it's not a cash game, it's a points game. You want to score as many points as you can. Sometimes the money, the cash is a means to an end. So it's nice when you can deal with both at the same time. But for me, like, I'd be more about, well, how many points is this worth to me overall, whether it's on a short-term basis, whether it's on a long-term basis. So, you know, it's not a hard and fast rule that I think you have to live by. But to me, I'd want to make sure, like, if I'm trading, like, it's got to be worth at least 200, 250 points, I reckon. Otherwise, it's probably not worthwhile, because, you know, if you're coming down to the last four rounds and you're out of trades, and then, you know, your gun 5/8, your gun halfback goes down for the last four rounds, like, I'd say that trade there could really be worth a lot more than just 250 points, you know. So that's the way I kind of look at it, in which case, you know, you've got to make sure it's really worthwhile to do it now. Now, I guess something that Bear was saying before about, you know, using some of the guys with that negative break even, but, you know, they're not flat out cheapies as well. They can play in your 17 as like a stepping stone to get towards, you know, the gun keeper that you want in your final 17. Like, I think that's fine when you've got guns who are either dropping in cash, or you've got cash cows who are maxed out. But I think it's hard balancing at times, where you can't quite get to that, you know, that middle kind of borderline keeper type stepping stone that, like, your Adam Dewey's or your Isaiah Papali'is or those types of guys. And I think sometimes you've got to work out, and I think you talked about it, like, I guess Ben Condon's probably the perfect example for this week, where it could be a real trap, or at the very least, you know, a mediocre cash cow where there really isn't that much on offer. But, you know, he could still make 60, 70, 80 grand. And it's also about the cash you free up, right? Because let's say you're trying to jump on a keeper who potentially might rise up in price out of your reach. For example, if going from, like, say, a Ricky to Condon means you can get, say, you know, Dev Fifita in before he gets out of reach, like, I think there might be merit to doing that. And yeah, sure, he might not make that much cash, but it means you don't lose out on the points that you'll probably miss out on with someone like a Dev Fifita. And I get what Bear's saying in terms of, you know, a HIA could happen to anyone, and when they're that expensive, it obviously can tank their price significantly. But, you know, if you play Supercoach always worrying about that, I think you're going to miss out on some massive points, like, you know, plenty of us did last year when we took too long to jump on Teddy, basically.
Yeah, agreed. And it's almost that advanced strategy of, you know, to us who've played many, many years, a cash cow is someone under that 200K mark, you know, who obviously has the greatest scope for money making. But to Bear's point earlier, someone like a Papali'i or a Matt Burton last week, you know, those, you know, kind of lower mid-range players who have an opportunity with a particularly low break even, they're going to, you know, pretty quickly get you that 150K that you would want from a base price cash cow, while also giving you kind of, particularly at the start of the season, you know, reliable points that you can kind of set and forget in your 17 until they mature.
Yeah, I definitely think there's definitely merit to it. And the thing is, you've got to get it right. Obviously, you pick the wrong guy and then you know, you hit your wagon to the mid-price cash cow, and then you're going to be left behind even further. So it's certainly not without risk. And that's why you know, the whole tried and true method of just going with the downgrade to a cash cow and upgrading to premium keepers has always been the way, you know, that's been the safe way to play Supercoach. But, you know, there's definitely that scope to get your Adam Dewey's, your Isaiah Papali'i's, the Tyrone Peachy's, who absolutely can go nuts out of nowhere and then be really, really effective for a couple of weeks, and then you can move them on to, you know, your Brian Tor'os and those types of guys who, you know, are going to be there come end of season as well.
Yeah, and I think the difference is you need to be much more aggressive with those mid-range cash cows to move them on as soon as they've fattened up, and not kind of keep them for that extra week longer and start to lose out on that cash as they kind of come off their big score. Which kind of gets me thinking, Bear, you know, if you've max traded, you're sitting at 29 trades coming into the week. Do you have a plan to save trades closer to 13? And maybe how many do you think you could be recommending if you're in the, say, top 10,000 come round 13?
How many you'd want by then?
Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah. If you're top 10,000 coming into the origin period, I think you're still a theoretical chance. I guess if you're probably outside the top 10,000, it's going to be pretty hard.
Yeah.
So I guess that might be the break point for realistic contention if you kind of get your stuff together, you know, come the origin period.
Oh, you'd at least want 20 going into that 13, because then you've still got like those five trades will take you to fifth, and you need that's even when you're identifying guys that you know you want to hold through origin. So that makes the choice of trading out Tedesco now a bit harder too, because he's an out and out gun. Like, he's still averaging 95, and you'll possibly want him back in by the end of the year as well. So if you trade him out now, you're not getting him back till at least, you'd say, after origin. That's a lot of games that he's going to play where you're going to be sitting on the edge of your seat just shaking your head. So, yeah, I'd be identifying players now. So, say you might, if you're tossing up between Luai and Munster and you still feel Munster might pin him by the end of the year, you might go Munster now and just hold him right through because he's down at that cheaper price. But, yeah, it all depends on what position you're in, if you're chasing or if you're sitting comfortably in that top 1,000.
Yeah, 20 trades coming into 13 sounds about right to me, Wilf. Is that kind of what you're targeting? And I guess I ask that because, you know, having max traded, I'm sitting on 29. That means I've only got 9 trades for 7 weeks of Supercoach before round 13. So, you know, my belt's going to have to start getting awfully tight pretty soon.
Yeah, look, I'm in the same boat, basically. I haven't saved any trades yet, and I've been going hard, obviously, trying to keep my team ticking along. I feel like, though, you know, a lot of my trades right now are still also looking towards round 13, and I think that's where you can have that tight balance where, let's say, and this is what I said before, like the likes of Jake Simpkin could very well be an option to downgrade in 2-3 weeks or whatever. You know, even I know some people are jumping straight on, and that is obviously risky, as we've identified in the past. But if you're not in love with any of the other cash cows, and you know Simpkin barring injury is going to be a great shout, then I don't have an issue with just doing that in. And, you know, you've got obviously the difficulty of then planning, well, how many do you want to have for round 13 versus also for round 17? And I think this is where looking at the whole buy period as a whole, like round 13 and round 17, looking at, well, you're going to have to field 17 technically each week, So can you get between the two rounds, 34, how many out of 34 can you get? If you end up fielding 17 in round 13 and you know that you're going to struggle for round 17 and you're just going to happily hold plenty of your origin stars through, knowing you're going to take a hit, you're only going to potentially only make 9 players round 17. You're going to just cop that hit. Like, if that's part of your plan, then, you know, you can burn your trades accordingly. So this is probably where it's worthwhile just kind of mapping out, well, what is round 17's team, what it's going to look like when you think about, well, what teams play that week? You know, who in that team or who out of those teams would I actually genuinely want for my run home? Because I feel like if you're trading them in for round 17, your chances are, you know, unless they're like a cash cow who then, you know, you peak in price and you trade them out to a final 17, final 21, whatever, final squad player. Like, I feel like any of the keepers, especially for round 17, you're bringing in, like the likes of, say, Tohu Harris comes to mind. He's probably one of my few round 17 targets, definitely, that I've already written in that I'm going to try to trade in after the round 13 bye, because obviously the Warriors don't play that round. So that's kind of how I would look at it. And that way you can plan, like, do you just burn more trades from round 13 because there's better options? You're going to like the look of your round 13 team more. And, you know, you can keep building towards that 17 now. Like, to me, that's probably the smarter way to play it rather than trying to aim for a specific number of trades, because it will depend how many trades you need to get from your round 13 team to your round 17 team to your final squad of 21 or 22 or however many players you think you're going to need come end of season.
Yeah, and I think we've all had at least 1 year playing Supercoach where we've kind of gotten to 3 or 4 weeks before the end of the season, we've run out of trades and we've got $2.5 million, sometimes $3 million worth of talent sitting on the bench with no way to trade them out. So, you know, it really does let you come home with the wind in your sails, not only for, you know, if you're a head-to-head player for head-to-head finals, but the ground that you can catch up against players that might be thousands of spots ahead of you in the final weeks just by virtue of having saved, you know, a small handful of trades over them can make all the difference. So really interesting chat, guys. But something that a few of our patrons have, you know, really asked us to talk about this week. And again, it's a funny, bit of a funny trade week with center wings being a hot topic of discussion. Lots of potential buys. I'm not sure that there's any that really scream must buys this week, Bear, but we've got a bit of a list here. You know, take your pick, mate, if you want to talk about a few of these and whether they're on your radar.
Looking at the list we've got down here, I'll just run through the names. So we've got, you're looking at guys like Bess, Nofo, Brian Kelly, Lomax, To'o, B-Moz, Fergo, Capewell, Corey Thompson, Osaka and Peachy. So ideally what I'd like to do first would be to try and get guys in who I think will be my run home center wings. And then for the last three, I'd obviously try to choose blokes who might fill in. So obviously, again, we might see Suali for the Roosters, so I might use a downgrade there and bring him in and hope that he gets a spot in for round 17. But out of these guys, I actually like the look of Bess and To'o. I've already got B-Moz. Guys for me like Fergo, again, he got saved by some late junk last week, and the week before he got that double, and I think one was at the end. So I was pretty high on him, but then just watching last week, I don't know. Parramatta is still a bit all over the shop as well. So, yeah, out of those guys, I've got even Nofo. The Tigers didn't look great. So I've got Best and To'o on my radar.
Yeah, Nofo, you know, obviously pumped out a 76, but was so unbelievably bad in defence, which, to be fair, a lot of the Tigers were, that, you know, remember a few years ago when he was, maybe even only a couple of years ago, he was the top scoring centre wing and he actually got dropped down to reserve grade because his defence was so bad. And if the Tigers continue to, you know, play as poorly as what they are, then they are going to be scapegoats and it wouldn't be out of the question if Nofo might be one of those sacrificial lambs, even though I think he's probably playing well enough to keep his spot. Wilf, you know, that's a fair bit of dollars in that list that we just went through there. Who are you kind of targeting, or what's your priority list out of them?
I think for me, like, honestly, what Bert said about targeting your final 17 center wing keepers there, honestly, a lot of these guys play around 13, and I honestly think I would want them for the rest of the year. And this is where I was kind of alluding to before when I was talking about working out what you think you'd like to have in your round 17 squad versus your round 13 squad. And there's definitely far more round 13 center wing keepers that I'd be happy with. You know, obviously got Ryan Tall already. I have Kurt Capewell, who I'm not sure I'll have him for the season. And there's a question mark whether he even plays round 13, given how well he played in Origin last year for Queensland. And I'm looking at the likes of Ryan Kelly in particular this week. And I was pretty high on Kelly in the preseason. And it was a coin toss actually between To'o and Kelly for me for my first kind of gun center wing. And I'm so glad I went with the better Brian in Bizza. But look, like Nofaluma at that price is, you know, he's if he hasn't been dropped for his poor defense by now, I just can't see, you know, Madge ever dropping him, because it just feels like for Madge, maybe the upside is worth it. And as bad as the defense is, like Nofo, he's such a popular team player. Like he just gives it his all every week, and sometimes his all means that he rushes in and leaves his wing completely exposed and the opposition scores down it. But he will score quite a few tries himself and obviously cause lots of problems, create attacking opportunities. Like he's just done it year on year out. So to me, like Nofo is a really good shout in the next week or two. Zach Lomax, I'm happy to let him drop a little bit more. His break even is still quite high. And, you know, the likes of Brett Morris, like he's just so out of price. Like he's only 7K, like cheaper than I think David Fita right now. And I can't justify paying that for a winger when we're really struggling to pay that for, you know, a back rower who obviously scores plenty of tries. But yeah, it's a tough one for sure.
I've got Morris and happy I do, but there's every chance I'm going to ride out his peak. Hope he gets to something like 800K, and he's not going to play 13, so he's going to be a bloke I'll probably look to downgrade to those guns who are playing 13. But yeah, then I'd probably look at bringing him back in for 17 somehow, which he can't keep this up. Like, especially in the center wing with how volatile it is, there's going to be a game where he has a quiet one and his break even's just going to be massive. So yeah, he's, for me, he'll be a trade out before 13.
Well, the realistic situation is if he does hit 800K, you could downgrade him to probably a Brian To'o and still have like 200 grand to upgrade someone else to, you know, get another one of these guys like a Nofo or a Lomax. So it makes a lot of sense to do that, as well as BMOZ is going, like, you'd rather have two of the center wing guns rather than just one.
He's also, you know, I know it's only a slightly smaller consideration, but he is, of this list of center wings, he's the only one that isn't scheduled to play 13, Origin pending. So, you know, plenty of viable downgrade options in that position for 13 while, you know, stashing a couple of hundred grand to your point, Wolf.
Yeah, so I think this is like I was saying before, you know, there's so many center wings that are great for round 13. And I'm wondering if it's a viable strategy that you just target this position a bit harder. If you get, say, five or six of these guns for your round 13 team, and then you're maybe a bit skinnier in the forwards or your hookers or whatever it might be. Like, I mean, like I said, I haven't really thought it through yet, and I haven't had the chance to sit down and really map it out myself. But genuinely, I feel like that could be a viable option, because if you get, you know, one or two of these guys go 100 plus, and the ownership's low because not everyone can have all of these guys. Like, I just think you would be in a really strong position in a tough scoring round, obviously, with the big buys, half the teams on buy. I just think there's an opportunity here, certainly. It could backfire, obviously, if they all score 20s all of a sudden that one week. That'll hurt.
If you've looked at the round 17 teams, so you've got Cameron, Manly, Souths, North Queensland, Dogs, Roosters, Sharks, and New Zealand.
Roosters, right?
Yeah, Roosters are there. So, but obviously, we talked about BMOZ. I think he's probably legitimately the only center, like gun center, I would like out of those teams. Like, I can't see anywhere in there. Like, obviously, Gagai's pretty good, but he'll be playing Origin. So there's maybe Val Holmes at a pinch, but I can't.
He'll be playing Origin too.
Well, yeah. So there's, I can't see anyone in there. So I'm thinking that the downgrades, even if there's even going to be any there, or I just think those guys we're talking about running into 13, you'd probably be better holding, because if you downgrade to some of the potential centers that are going to be playing 17, they're probably going to dish you up some crap score, and then you've got to try and get rid of them straight after. So again, the points that these top centers will get you are between now and 17, I don't think some of these centres that are going to be playing 17 will make up those points in one round.
Yeah, that's what I was really saying. It could be a viable strategy just to load up on those round 13 guns in the centre wing and just hold them for the season. You just cop a hit in round 17 at the centre wing position. You just load up other, you know, in the forwards and you know, maybe the... Sorry, in the forwards and, you know, maybe in the halves, if there's an opportunity to do that. Yeah, 17's looking really tough, mate, from my preliminary planning.
17? Yeah. Oh, 17 looks absolutely crap, to tell you the truth.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if you get the chance to actually plan it and work out what do you actually want from round 17, maybe the best strategy for this year actually is just to try find 17 players around 13. And just copped a hit in round 17, but you're well ahead. That's kind of where I'm leaning at the moment, and I'm still trying to work it out, obviously. But yeah, a lot of time to pass until then. But yeah, it's certainly it's the right time to start planning, because obviously it will impact how you trade over the next few weeks as well.
It definitely will. And obviously we mentioned all these players that we went through, bar B Moz play 13, Capewell and To'o from the Panthers, but there is a triumvirate from another team that isn't quite so fancy. You touched on Brian Kelly, Wilf, but we've also got Tyrone Peachy and Corey Thompson there as viable options. And, you know, somewhat shockingly, of the three of them, it's Corey Thompson with a 74 average that's pacing both Kelly and Peachy for an average at the moment. And a lot of people thinking is a bit of a flyer, 3.3% owned. Is he someone that you might want to take a flyer on?
It just terrifies me, the idea I'm going to trade into Corey Thompson. Hey, I was chatting to some other people and I likened it to maybe trading in like a Will Kennedy at fullback, where they are scoring wise. If you remove their names and you looked at their stats and their scoring, you're just like, well, this person's a viable option. And you just, the moment you attach their names, you kind of think, oh, hang on, might have to rethink that.
You almost have to kind of take your super coach kind of glasses off, knowing what Corey Thompson's produced in the past, although he has been fringe relevant from time to time over the years. And you would suggest that Brian Kelly's got a much greater pedigree. But look, he's 532. He's already gone up 111K. So with a break even of 24 playing Manly this week, you know, if you do want to really take that kind of flyer on a fringe player like him, this is the week to do it. Peach getting decent minutes in the 13 role bear. He's a center. He's got that dual center wing second row option, so he can flip with Capewell or a Burbo. Does that flexibility attract you anymore?
No, I just think there's too many other options to run with, in my opinion.
I have to say, with his minutes, they are quite trappish there. Just keeping in mind, like, he only played 80 this week because Sammy went down in the seventh minute or something like that with that HIA. And surprisingly, he wasn't the one who moved to center. It was actually Proctor. So that inflated his minutes. And last week he got more minutes again because Jamal Fogarty had to go off injured. So I think fully healthy, he's been getting around the 43, 44 minute mark. And that's a lot more scary to me. So, and look, he's obviously got the attacking upside. We saw him do that in round three with the 79 and 101 last week. But yeah, the base isn't quite there for me. And it's not the worst, given he's playing in the middle. He's even at 40 minutes, he might score 35, 40 points in base, and very comparable to a Kurt Capewell type, where he's, you know, at his worst when he doesn't score a try or anything like that, he's pumping out that 35 to 40 base. But I just feel like there's more likelihood of attacking stats for Capewell when you get to run off like a Nathan Cleary and Jerome Luai when he swaps sides versus a Tyron Peachey, who obviously has to create a lot of it himself through ball playing. And you know, when you can pass to a David Fifita and obviously watch him run and just, you know, blitz half the team on his way to the try line and you still get 20 points for that, that's not too bad though.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, guys, we've gone deep on, you know, what constitutes the value of a trade. We've talked about some of the more popular centre wing options for the week. Bear, what are your trades that you're planning to make this week?
So I'm planning on trading Tedesco, and it could possibly come back and bite me in the bum, maybe not this week, but in the not-too-distant future. I just think... I'm putting him and I'm moving Hoy down to fullback and I'm bringing in Luai. I'm taking him over Toto just because he seems to get his hands on the ball a bit more. And at the minute he's playing like Cody Walker was on his stretch like that. An average of 85 at the minute for him is crazy. So if I don't get him now, I think he's going to, like I said before, he's probably going to be out of the price I'd like to pay for him. On top of that, I still think he's going to miss Origin this year and he plays 13. So that is letting me lean towards him more than Munster for the minute. I'll have to see for the run home, see who I like better there. But Hoy's not moving anywhere. And at 366K, he's in that middle ground. I only have to try and find 200 to get even a turbo in 2 weeks. So that's the plan there. I'll probably look at getting turbo in before I bring Teddy back. And the other one was I haven't totally decided yet, but I'd say it'll probably be Ricky for Lucy. He's knocking out a 65 average at the minute. They look for him a lot close to the line. He's got a 22 break even, so he's going to be going north. It's a tough matchup this week versus South, but then their run includes Manly, who we don't know how they'll be yet. Turbo obviously will make him better, but again, he should still go all right there. So Manly, Dragons, Gold Coast, Newcastle, New Zealand and Dragons again. And then he catches Penrith with missing a couple of players there. So hopefully I can ride him through till 13 would be the ideal.
Lucy's virtually the same price as James Fisher-Harris. So I guess I'm kind of interested that with JFH being 7K cheaper and Penrith having such a great run, is it just the upside, the attacking stats with Lucy that attracts you more over Fisher-Harris?
Pretty much. Running out on that edge, he's not in the middle. And obviously Penrith had just got a whole heap of guys playing for him who could go off on any week. Like you see Kikau hit 100 and then he hits, what, the next week like a 30, even though that might have been a bit of did he get a head knock or something? Capewell's gone from a 96 to a 40. Fisher-Harris had his big game and then he dropped down to whatever he scored the other week as well. So I'd just like Lucy a bit better and I'm kind of enjoying the way Dewey's playing at the minute. He has been on some short balls. Brooks is going all right. So, yeah, we'll see. It's an obvious punt, but...
It could pay off, mate. Dewey certainly did. So, and like we've said, we've tracked how your team's going week after week and you're making up ground at a rate of knots. So not the worst idea to get behind whatever you're doing in any given week, frankly, mate. Wilf, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm quite torn. I was really keen on being able to do a Hoy to Luai trade as well this week, but due to obviously, scoring and things like that, he didn't quite get to the price I needed him to be, and I'm a little bit short even because I wanted to trade out Ricky, and I was considering, like, to me, if I was able to go Ricky to Condon and get Hoy to Luai, I'd probably, you know, just cop it. I know Condon's not the perfect trade-in, but it would be viable for me just... So I can get the gun there, who I think is going to go, you know, pretty massive this week. So, yeah, that really hurts. I flirted with the idea of trading out Teddy, but, yeah, I didn't think I could do it, honestly. So my Manscaped balls aren't as big as Bear's, so.
You don't have the 3XL, mate. Not dissimilar, you know, my way of thinking, and Condon I fully anticipate to be a pretty mediocre cow, but he does allow me to, you know, if I go Ricky down to Condon, and I think Ricky's a more of an urgent trade out because, you know, being an edge bench back rower is super coach poison, and he'll start to leak cash pretty quickly if he stays there. So Ricky down to Condon gives me the cash to go from Tino up to David Fifita, who unfortunately I'm a week or two late on him, but better late than never because he's 754 now and he could be 900, you know, in 2 weeks' time. So, yeah, it's a bit of now or never for David Fifita, and I'll probably put the armband on him.
Yeah, look, I think I can totally understand your thinking there, and if I had something as pressing as that, I'd probably pull the trigger. So I guess my vanilla set of trades might be just like a Ricky down to Condon and then like a Tessie New up to my centre wing pod of choice. And Brian Kelly is the one who appeals to me at the moment. I haven't really planned it out. Like there's been a couple of wild ones. Like I was thinking Hoy to Jake Simpkins straight up. And I know it's wild. I don't want to really quite do that. But then that could allow me to do Ricky to Brian Kelly and, you know, I'd be very happy with that kind of setup as well. But yeah, so I'm kind of just going to map it out. One thing I will do is make sure if I reverse trades before the start of the first game, I'm going to double and triple check my reserves. So I told you guys, but obviously a bit of a sob story where I managed to check my trades and my captains and my vice captains and stuff, but I managed to miss that I had left the reserve, one of my reserves on Tessie New, and he was playing in the first game in the route. So there was no way I would want to reserve him. He'd be in my starting side if I wanted to play him. So I planned to sit Tessie, but unfortunately he was one of my reserves. That meant I only had three others to split, and that meant I couldn't play Sam Walker in my 17 last week. So rookie error, just thought I'd share that. So make sure you check your team list because that's cost me 50 points and I'd be sitting in the top 1,000 right now if I hadn't made that error. So yeah, please check your teams. Public service announcement there. Once you reverse trades, it's not just checking your captaincy, your vice captain, and your starting lineup. You got to check all four reserves for you. Otherwise, you might make an error you will regret, like I did.
Excellent. So I think we've covered this in a fair whack of detail, boys. All that's left, Wilf, if you can give us the group comp update.
Yeah, so we got three teams now in 17th and 9th. So congrats have to go to Reese of Coach of Reese Lightning, currently in 7th. Sir Vancelot, who was leading last week, Coach of KRT in 8th. And Daniel, Coach of the People's Chin, sitting in 9th. So it's going to be tight competition. Thanks as always, supercoachchampion.com. Don't forget promo code CHAMP for 10% off and free shipping for any of the goods you can get on there. And as always, we've got that, we've got, you know, one of the spiffy supercoachchampion.com rings up for grabs and $200 voucher for team merchandise. So have to finish off by shouting out the champs. They're just flying. We are really fully backing you guys in. I think we could be, you know, there's a genuine chance one of these champs could take out the comp this year. That's how well they're going. They got some really good teams up top there. They're well set up, so it's not fluking it, you know, just purely off captaincy choices and things like that. They've made mistakes and still managed to get themselves in the top 20. So it's going to be a fascinating watch for sure. As always, please review and let us know what we're doing good and what we're doing badly and what we'd like us to improve. We're always happy to listen to feedback, and we're always tweaking what we're doing so we can put the best possible product out for you guys. And yeah, if you want to make sure you're subscribed so you can get our episodes as soon as they drop. But yeah, we appreciate all of you for listening, and yeah, good luck for your trades and your planning for the coming week.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it's got a feeling of a bit of a sliding doors week with all the trades and shenanigans that are going on. So good luck to all.